No, that wasn't on paper. So one of the Justin was like, he has no K-12 experience. I'm like, when I gave my speech, I was like, I actually do have K-12 experience. So in addition to the higher ed. So, but yeah. Anyway, very exciting. So, but very nerve wracking at the same time.
Oh, I was just talking to myself. I saw my website for my.
Oh yeah. I
had a thing happen today that is very infuriating.
And I'm like, ooh,
well, probably infuriating.
I've been in a job for a long time. I've been HR, a social worker, grievances, investigations.
One of the men at Medicaid managed care organizations decided they did not want to add me to their network.
Like impartial,
even
so
though
like,
there are not, they said that they
compartmentalized really well,
even though they said they were proceeding with reviewing my agreement. They said that they have decided not to
sure
offer contracts to certain
that
kinds of
a
behavioral health
site,
providers.
Because I work at the Y also,
and
Jeff
I'm like, okay, so
there.
You're telling me you have enough therapists to meet the need of your patients in San Pedro Bana?
Like, oh, thanks, Jeff. I'm kind
and
of
I don't
you
know if it's
because
I'm telehealth only,
referral and you're
or if it
persuading.
Is something else. Or if they're like going to move out of the area, or if they're going to start requiring people to use their own. I've heard
yes,
sort of
exactly.
Some of these things
really?
Having their
exactly.
Like telehealth services. So I have a.
Thanks for your email, Lynn. I really appreciate it. Can somebody say something so I can check my sound, please?
We can.
Hello, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Yeah, it popped in. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
We can hear you really well, so thank you for doing that.
Well, I couldn't. It's been a long day.
Well, we'll be getting started in a couple minutes. Thanks for hanging
in. Oh, yeah, no problem
there.
At all.
He's going to stay with us.
Who?
Dr. Gomez.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. That's kind of
I think we're nervous you might leave the board, but
yeah,
we're.
That's
so.
What I was.
That was and then, well.
We're excited for
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
but we also don't want you to
see on the board, school board also was like, oh, are you going to teach? I use that to de-stress also.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I would probably keep it. And
yeah.
It's after. It's not like it's during the day or anything. I've always taught after work and then on the weekend. So.
Yeah.
I think that like the afternoon or evening workout is fine for me because it's a good brain reset.
Yeah.
But it's like lately it's more like 10 p.m. It's very hard to be motivated.
You work out at 10?
I can't do it. It's like by then I want to go.
No.
It's not.
Recording in progress.
I want to check real quick if closed captions are showing. I don't see them. I need to fix that.
They were showing for me when I had...
Good, thank you.
I got them on.
Down when I was on another site.
All right, we will now call to order this evening's study session of the Champaign County Mental Health Board, Wednesday, April 29th, 2026, 5:45 p.m. in the Shields Carter Room of the Bennett Administrative Center, Urbana, Illinois. May I have a roll call?
Here.
Sorry, Alejandro Gomez.
Here.
Den Aris, not present. Tony Nichols. Not present. Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Jane Sprandl.
Here.
Jen Straub. Not present. And Molly McClay.
Here. Did you say John?
John Paul Joachim. Sorry. Not present.
All right, so we do have a quorum, so we can proceed forward. I know that Jen Straub will be here late. Den Aris will not be here. And the other two hopefully will be. One of them is walking in right now. Tony Nichols
Tony
is here.
Nichols is here.
And John Paul Joachim should be here. So we will have most everyone here for most of the study session. So next, we can move to approval of the agenda. The agenda is the entirety of the packet, two pages. Is there anyone who would like to make comments or make adjustments to the agenda, or would anyone like to make a motion?
If there are no modifications, I make a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
Second.
Thank you very much. Sprandl moves. Palencia seconds. Any final discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the agenda as presented, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. The ayes have it. The agenda is approved. Next, we will move to public participation and agency input. As always, members of the public, including from agencies, are welcome to speak with the Champaign County Mental Health Board and share their thoughts with us. We cannot respond directly to public comment, but we may use it to inform future decisions. If you would like to make public comment, there are many ways to do so. You can approach the podium. You can fill out a comment card and hand it to me, the chair. If you are online, you can raise your hand on Zoom, or you can put something into the chat to let us know that you'd like to speak. For all meetings, but particularly this one, agency representatives and others providing input which might impact board actions should be aware of the Illinois Lobbyist Registration Act and take appropriate steps to be in compliance with the act if making public comment. I may reserve the right to limit individual time to 5 minutes and total time to 20 minutes, especially because we have a lot of material to get through this evening. So with that, is there anybody in person or online who would like to make public comment? All right. It appears that no one at this time is wanting to make public comment. There will be another portion for that later in the study session, but we will go ahead and move on to chairperson's comments. I'm Molly McClay, the chair of the Champaign County Mental Health Board. I had comments, but I'm not sure if I'm just going to say them in the review of funding requests or not. So I'll waive my comments for now, but I'll do a little intro to what we have remaining in front of us this evening after our next item on the agenda, which is Executive Director Lynn Canfield's comments.
Hi. So I should keep it short. I did get a little bit of feedback about our staff intros last week, and I tried to make them shorter for this week. Leanne and I have been talking about them. Hopefully they're shorter. Maybe not. We'll find out. But anyway, I don't really have anything else to add. I'm going to try to keep up. I do want to note that John Paul Joachim is here. Tony Nichols is here. Okay.
All right, thank you very much. So next we will move on to the contents of our study session, which is the review of program year 2027 funding requests continuing from last week's meeting. So for information and to support the board's reviews, CCMHB staff had prepared draft reviews of each request for program year 2027 funding. They are presented in a separate packet and may be referenced throughout the study session. So this packet is also available online for anyone who's following along. And we did reference this at our meeting last week, and we will be picking up where we left off. So I just want to give a brief reminder about the process for just a refresher, and anybody who might not have been here last time, is that we have 17 remaining programs to review. Of those, at the time of our last study session, 4 of those programs did not have their audit or equivalent financial review document into us. However, since our last meeting, one agency that has 2 programs up for review has turned theirs in as of yesterday, and it has been reviewed by staff and all issues resolved. So First Followers, we will be able to review those applications this evening. Unfortunately, GCAP and TASC have not turned theirs in, so we voted to defer on discussing those applications until those documents come in. So unfortunately, we will not be able to discuss those again until the earliest May 20th, which is when we will next have a study session. So there will be 15 programs for review this evening. We will start with having Leon Bryson share a 1 to 2 minute overview of the program so that the board reviews can focus on, comments, questions, concerns. Each application has been assigned two board members to review it, and they can split up the applications however they would like to. I'm going to be keeping a stopwatch going and lapping us with each application review once it ends. Last time we ranged from like 3 minutes to 10 minutes for an application. So I'd like to try to keep it between 6 and 8 minutes as much as possible, because, you know, we have 15 to get through. Please also keep in mind reasons to fund and reasons not to fund programs, given that the amount that's been requested of us is about $2 million more than we have available. So we are going to have to say no to some things this year. The only other thing I wanted to add is just a point of clarification. So we have asked all agencies to be available to answer questions if the board has questions. However, agencies are not, this is not a period of like call and response from agencies. If we have a direct question, board members have been instructed to direct the question to the chair, and the chair will ask an agency representative to either come forward to answer or to unmute themselves to answer. We will not have agencies speaking out of turn. There may be times when board members are bringing up comments or concerns that you would like to respond to, but unfortunately, unless we have a direct question for you, we will not have the capacity for agencies to speak during the review unless directly asked a question. However, public input is always an opportunity for all community members, including members of agencies, to speak with us. So public comment may be used to make comments. So I just wanted to clarify that. Part of it is we just have very limited time. As much as we would like to have a back and forth, it's not possible. And this is not an opportunity for anybody to correct their application live. It's, you know, just for us to get things clarified. So with that, we can go ahead and move on. But before we start, board members, does anyone have any questions? All right. Well, with that, I will ask Leon Bryson to share the first overview.
Thank you. No pressure here. The first one is Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, See You Change. The request for $94,135 would continue a program the Mental Health Board currently funds, supporting a case manager and smaller portions of two indirect staff. The 10% increase in costs isn't explicitly justified in the budget documents, and the proposal does not increase numbers of people to be served. Offer intensive, personalized support for young people who have justice system involvement or related challenges, and supports for their families as well.
All right, thank you very much. And the reviewers for these are Elaine Palencia and Kyle Patterson. So please share your thoughts.
I'll go first. I want to say in general that about the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club, earlier this year, Amy Brown, who at that time was the director, came to a study session and explained that she was putting an infrastructure in place that would assure more uniform training of the people that were involved in these programs. And it's something that I had always wondered about, because so many people come and go in the Don Moyer program, so who's a volunteer, who's not. So I thought that was it was a good presentation. It was a good thing to do for the programs that they subcontract and run themselves. And I just want to mention that I think it's a very good advance in their process. As for this CU change, it struck me as a well presented program to help at-risk youth 10 to 17 or 10 to 18. They're depending on where you look, and their families, and that's for 24 to 48 months. So 2 to 4 years, that's a good chunk of time to make a difference. And education is emphasized, and that seems to be kind of at the center of it. You know, underserved youth who have social service and mental health needs, who are not doing well in school, which is such a predictor of the future. I did wonder about the 10% increase. They got last year $85,575, and it's $94,135,000, and it just, you know, isn't explained. But so I'd like to know that. And there were a couple of the number of service contacts, our staff noted that there was a little discrepancy wherever those were put into the application. But other than that, the outcomes seem to, as our staff said, align with the program goals. And so it looks like a good stable program to continue, and I won't go through the scope of services, but they have several well-stated areas of concern that they deal with. Kyle, you go on.
I don't have much to add. Obviously, this is targeting at-risk youth. This is a program that we've funded for some time now. I do like that when they target students, it's not just based on behavioral symptoms. It also includes educational symptoms such as having a below level reading level, being at risk of being held back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's looks pretty good.
All right, thank you both. Are there any other board members who have comments or questions?
I think the only thing I would also be curious about is for the 10% increase, again, everything is increasing in our personal lives, but if it would have said due to supply cost or salaries, that would have answered that one. But yeah, so it might be one of those things where we could consider, you know, maybe just funding it like what we did last year or something. That might be an option for us.
Any other comments or questions? I'll share my two pieces that I've been sharing for all of the other programs that I'll continue to do. Reasons that we should fund this. It's an important community program that we've funded for many years. It is working with at-risk youth who need a lot of support, and it's a core service where I think other services are not necessarily reaching this population, and I think it's good quality services that are very holistic. And like Kyle said, you know, are looking at youth who are at risk in a multiple different ways. And I think the program has improved over the years, and the organizational trainings and structure have as well. Reasons to consider not funding it or not funding it fully. I am concerned that we continue to be 100% of the program's funding. I would like to see the agency reach out and secure more types of funding for this program, and also that they did not justify the reason for the increase, although the increase is quite small compared to some of the other increases that we are seeing. So it might be worth considering to fund it at a lower amount and encourage more diverse funding in the future. Any additional comments?
I guess the one thing I would say is it says 94% of the requested amount is personnel cost, so I assume it's salary.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions? All right, seeing none, we can next move to our next program.
Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club Community Coalition Summer Initiatives. The request for $100,000 would continue a program the Mental Health Board currently funds to expand short-term supportive activities, events, and program options many local children would not access otherwise. A long-standing collaboration between the Champaign County Community Coalition and Don Moya Boys and Girls Club, subcontracting with many educators and agencies over the summer.
Thank you very much. And Alejandro Gomez and Tony Nichols were the reviewers for this one, so please share your thoughts.
With kids being out of school over the summer, I think this is a significant program for our community. Should fund this. They're requesting the same amount as previous years, $100,000. No raise in this request. It's large diversity in population that they're serving. 900 non-treatment plan clients, but with a total of 11,750 service contacts. So it's a program that helps youth kind of already talked about it, but they're vulnerable in our community. They provide a safe and structured summer program, teaching them leadership skills, practical skills, time management, organizational, engage in positive interest-aligned activities, helping them to stay, you know, safe and healthy and, you know, busy throughout the summer. So it's a good program to continue to invest in.
All right. Thank you very much. And Alejandro, I know you two split yours. So any other comments or questions from board members?
Well, I didn't do this one together, but I did know the previous program for the same agency had 100% represented, or the majority of the request went to personnel costs, and I believe this one does not. So.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? I think I will share, you know, we do continue to be, well, I guess I'll frame it as my my two questions that I've been doing. So why should we fund this? This is a longstanding program we've supported. It's an innovative way to prevent youth violence. And it's also an innovative way to help new services get off the ground. This has been sort of an incubator for smaller nonprofits that maybe don't have the capacity at this time to ask for our funding directly. So they work with this program to be able to start to offer services and begin to grow, which is very, very cool. I think when youth are able to engage in creative approaches, movement-based approaches, leadership skills, it is a way of improving mental health that is a little bit different, but it's very important and sometimes the most impactful. I also appreciate that they're not asking for an increase. They're one of the only ones who is not. Reasons to not fund or not fund fully. It's a relatively small contract. You know, we're not looking at like crisis services that run all year that we you know, are the foundation of mental health services in the community. And I would like to see this agency continue to expand their funding reach and not only ask the Mental Health Board. I am also a little curious why there's not an increase. And, you know, if that amount is the same from year to year, is it because their costs truly are that stable, or are there other reasons for that? So those are my thoughts. Any other thoughts from board members on this one?
I think that's been for years, right?
It was $107,000 for a long time because this was based on an agreement to sustain a piece of the Access Initiative project through this, and that was the costs. like the exact amount of the thing that we couldn't do directly. And then it went down to 90,000 for a couple of years because of our budget constraints. And then I think a couple years ago, we brought it back up to 100,000. So it's been hovering. Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, it may be that this is another year where we might have to bring it back down again. But I think, you know, we don't necessarily, we're trying to determine at what in what instances lowering a requested amount makes sense versus not granting a request versus granting a whole request. So that's very helpful context. Are there any final comments or questions? All right, seeing none, we can move on to the next one.
Family First Advocacy Empowering Bridge Program. This is a new application from an agency identified as a family-run organization. These are a key component of the State of Illinois new approach to children's mental health mental health. Funding would support two full-time parent-peer support partners. Family leaders are also mentioned, but could be more clear. Budget forms need some revisions. Lived experience is central to the development of the program and individual plans. Although they have not done an audit before, the agency has shared their 2025 financial information.
All right, thank you very much. And Den Erez, who is not here tonight, and Jane Sprandle are the reviewers for this one. So I know between Jane and myself, we have some of Den's comments. But Jane, go ahead.
Okay, well, I will go ahead and start. So yes, this is a new program. We reviewed a program last week that has like a peer approach, which there is great value in that. I will say maybe I was grumpy or there were a couple phrases that I didn't care for on their approach and maybe I just misinterpreted them. With my background and, you know, as a school board member and as a president, you know, there was a phrase in here about parents will know their options if they disagree with the school's decisions, where to go for the answers to their questions, how to get action when their child is experiencing bullying, and feel empowered to use their voice to advocate for their child. That's wonderful in theory, but in my experiences, bullying is very hard to explain to a parent. We're currently living in a society where my boy would never do that as a police officer pulls a gun from a young man's waistband. So yes, I feel there's a great need for peer-to-peer, you know, support, encouragement, things like that. I just think that we have to be very cautious on what kind of training do these peers have. I don't want to see us set up a situation where we're encouraging peers to encourage concerns with school districts, with police departments, authority, things like that. So that was like one of my little concerns there. Den had questioned staff credentials and training was not well defined. I think she had some questions about that. It's $233,355. And again, I know that's for the coordinator of the program. I did not dive in exactly like how much like some of those individuals are getting paid, but it just it seems like a lot for a peer-to-peer program. Obviously, like I said, this is the first time they have submitted an application, so they would need to do some CLC plan, and I'm sure Ms. Somerville would be happy to assist with that. We talked about how they had gotten an audit type thing in. You know, Molly likes the question, if we don't fund this, will it be able to go forward? It looks like, because they talk about past participants, they must have some kind of funding right now if they're doing this, or is it solely free? Or, you know, totally volunteer, I'm not sure. So since we're not funding at this time, in theory, we wouldn't be cutting any staff, and we would not be causing any parents or children losing services because we're not currently funding. So yeah, I guess that'd be one of my questions is how are they being funded now if they're talking about past past clients? So there's just a couple of my uncertain questions that I ran across.
Jane, is that something you would like to ask the agency directly? All right. Is there someone from Family First Advocacy who is available to answer a question?
I can't tell from the names in the Zoom, but I can look through the chat. No one is raising their hand. No one is raising their hand.
Yeah, if you are on Zoom and you're from Family First Advocacy, please raise your hand so we can unmute you, or you can unmute yourself and answer our question. Or if you're in person and we don't know who you are, please feel free to come forward to the podium.
So I guess like finances is like my number one kind of question, like how are they currently running this program? They talked about sale of goods and services for $30,000. Well, what are those goods and what are those services that you're going to bring in some revenue of $30,000?
Thank you very much, Jane. I'm not seeing that we have a representative available, but we may be able to find that out as we proceed. Is there anyone else who would like to make comments or answer questions or ask questions?
Yeah, I just have a comment. It's interesting how things have gone forward in many of these issues. This looks very much like something parent groups used to do on their own without asking for funding. I was in a group like this for many years that did almost all these things. So the whole idea of professionalizing it into funding is something I'm just interested in because it used to be that you could get that kind of support, that kind of finding friends, establishing a group for your children, all of that with a group that worked very well for years in this community. So I've seen that in several areas of what we do, that things become monetary that never were before. And I'm not saying for or against, I'm just pointing it out. Something to just look at.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from board members? Oh, sure, go for it.
Just to let you all know, this is a statewide family-run organization. If you all recall, Youth and Family Peer Support Alliance, whom the board supported for many years, this is an extension of that family-run organization. So it is an organization full of peer supporters that support families, individuals and their families that have lived experience. This is a huge model. And then I do also know that they do receive some funding from a foundation.
Thank you very much for clarifying that. One thing I did want to say kind of for reasons why to fund it is that like peer support models are very strongly recommended, have really good evidence, and they're empowering. And I think this is a particular area with peer support where unless I'm understanding something incorrectly, we don't necessarily have this kind of going on right now that we are funding. And it's, you know, it's in issues that are intricately tied to mental health, especially helping families advocate for their children in the school system with their mental health and with other needs, I think is meaningful. And I love that lived experience is such an important part of this mission. Reasons to consider not funding it. It is a new program, and we may not be able to fund any or many new programs this year. They did not turn in their their audit equivalent originally. They did eventually, but it wasn't included with the original application. There's also, in my understanding from talking to staff, is that their accounting system currently does not use the type of accounting that... Okay.
This is one of those, if you ask somebody, do they use the accrual method of accounting, they'll often say yes. But we know from experience that doesn't mean they do, and that it can take quite a long time to transition from cash accounting to accrual. So it's one of those, it's a vulnerability that's sort of behind the scenes, like can really, really hurt an agency if they don't have support to get there fast. So they said they were, but because they haven't done an audit before, we didn't have any way to know what kind of accounting method they're using.
Thank you for clarifying that. I think some of these concerns are kind of around the organizational readiness for working with our funding structure and our funding requirements. So if we did decide to not fund, we could encourage, you know, improvements to these areas and funding in the future. One other thing I noted is that some of the funding would be going toward like a retreat or and conference for families. And I think, you know, we could potentially fund part of their programming, but maybe not all of it. That might be an area that we could choose not to award if we wanted to do something partial. So those are some reasons to consider not. Is there anyone else who would like to make final comments on this one?
So I will question, would it be appropriate, like if we have a few questions here, since they were not able to be present to answer them, can we send those, like say to yourself and Lynn, and they can contact the agency? Because at this point, I'm kind of like, I don't know enough. There's too many things I don't know. I would probably be like, I don't think this is a good fit this year. But if they're able to say, here's what we would have said if we were on the call, it might change my motivation. So is that something we can do, is submit questions to the agency?
Because of our time constraints, if they could answer us like very quickly, it'd be worth it probably. I don't know if you all are ready to see what we've already received. Like volumes and volumes of additional information, some of it that we didn't ask for, but all of it is important, so it's coming your way. But the sooner I can get it to you all, the better. And I think Mr. Bryson set a deadline for a similar request of midnight Tuesday. So, I mean, if y'all are okay with that, we can absolutely ask for extra information. And if people can get it to us, we'll get it to you immediately. And then it'll also be in the board packet so that it's public, because we do have to make it public. But, this one was missing a lot of information. So if you ask, if you don't have a specific question, they might start answering all the questions, which is... like, I don't have any problem with that. I just want you to know that you could have a lot more reading to do.
And I think we also need to be fair to, I guess, for in terms of like fairness in the process, we did ask all agencies to be present to answer questions. And there are sometimes are extenuating circumstances where agencies have had emergencies and could not attend. I think if we open up for one to answer questions outside of the meeting, we may need to open it up for everyone. But I think that's only if questions are, what were you, I'm not sure, I'm not making a decision or anything, but.
If it helps y'all to consider this, Mr. Bryson did ask for two different types of information from agencies, so we might still hear from them.
The opportunity for them to correct anything that was incorrect in the staff.
To correct any of our mistakes.
Yes, but that's what also, I was trying to say.
Yeah, but that's also, you know, folks will send information filling in gaps too, and you're going to get to see all of that. So.
I think the only other thing that kind of makes me nervous about funding this is their non-treatment plan clients is 1,000, which seems really high. And I don't see any actual treatment plan clients, so I don't know how many people they're actually serving and getting all these services. There's not enough information on how much bang for our buck we're getting from this if we do fund this agency. So I don't feel comfortable funding this program.
Thank you for sharing that. I also wanted to add something from something Dan had shared around the outcomes and targets are more qualitative than quantitative. They appreciated the thoroughness of all the different support systems that include but are not limited to community groups that form solid networks for children and parents. There were a lot of different outcomes and targets, and they were quite ambitious also. And I think the kind of ambitiousness compared with the organizational readiness might make this difficult to fund this year. All right. For the sake of time, I will move us to the next application.
All righty. First Followers First Step Community Reentry House. The request for $69,500 would continue a program currently funded by the Mental Health Board to meet housing and related support needs of people in reentry. This is not an increase over the current funding amount. The other program funding is from contributions. The agency runs one house for men, and as of program year 25, another house for women. Each can house up to four people at a time. People with lived experience inform every level of the organization. Gaps in the CLC plan and discrepancies in budgets and forms make it difficult for MHB staff to analyze fully. The audit is being reviewed, as of 4/28.
Guess what?
As of 4/29, it's all done. We've reached a lovely conclusion with all of it. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. So Jen Straub, who is not here yet, unfortunately, and John Paul Joachim are the reviewers for this one. So please go forth.
So this is a program that we've funded in previous years. You know, they do hit a very vulnerable or serve a very vulnerable population, those coming out of incarceration, who obviously can find it very difficult to find housing. So that's one thing, obviously, it provides, and then helping them transition to hopefully employment and then thriving on their own in the community. Obviously, there are some issues with the program. One is with the late audits. Other issues are with some of our smaller programs is funding sources. They are 82%, we're funding 82% of the total program revenue. There was in the bigger application saying that there was $50,000 that was coming from ARPA funds. I'm assuming those are going away. The money is going to salary, general operating expenses. I am worried about the future of the program. You know, it has done good in the community, but the sustainability without MHB funds is worrisome. I know Jen had some other comments as well, said that they do kind of rely on our contracts for cash flow since their state contracts are reimbursement-based. the other thing is we're not seeing some action steps for most of the MHB priorities, including language accessibility, continuous quality improvement, and accountability. Some of the goals are a little vague, like staff will be trained in leadership skills, but like which and how. I guess there's one other thing about why is there counseling and support for parenting only in the women's house and not in the men's home? It is a good program. People have great, good hearts, and they want to serve in the community, and they do well with when they do serve in the community, but not everybody who serves and does all this work in the community is great at business and running a business, and part of that is filling out these applications and doing these audits. I like that we have the person from UIUC, Professor Dariati, I think they would benefit from continuing to follow with them and working on how to make sure that all their financials and their bookkeeping is in order and that they can, find a way to get things, their ship in order so that we don't have to keep worrying about the sustainability of the program every year.
You're Jen, on the hot seat, Jen.
Would you like to share? John did share a little of your thoughts. Jen will not share additional on this one, but John has already shared her thoughts. Any other comments or questions from board members? So I guess in the keeping of my questions of why should we fund, why should we not fund, I think, you know, I agree with everything John has stated and Jen has alluded as well. Like, this is an extremely important resource for an important population that is often overlooked by services. This is a well-known operation. It's known to be collaborative. It has a lot of collaborative agreements and a lot of individuals with lived experience involved. I think this program did not ask for an increase. So whenever that is the case, I am both appreciative and also wondering what is causing the stability that would permit that in this unstable environment. Why reasons to not? There were, I guess, it's been alluded to the issues of the audits not coming in on time. They've never been on time in the entire time we've funded them for the past several years. And some of the budget stuff, the financial stuff on the application was sloppy and did not quite match. I think there was an issue where stuff didn't match the two applications from this agency. And also the CLC plan was incomplete, which I wouldn't expect from an agency that's been funded many times before. It is, you know, that some of these issues have not kind of remedied over time is concerning, and maybe some reasons to consider, shifting or changing how we fund this agency, either with this specific program or the other program. Any other thoughts or questions from board members? All right, seeing none, we can now move on to the next one.
First Followers Peer Mentoring for Reentry. The request for $120,000 would continue a program currently funded by the Mental Health Board through a variety of supports, such as the Drop-In Center, Workforce Course, and Gardening Initiative. The budget narrative doesn't explain the 26% increase, but the proposed contacts with employers and landlords on behalf of the clients would more than double. The priority category is safety and crisis stabilization with a focus on a unique target population. People with lived experience informed every level of the organization. Again, gaps in the CLC plan and budget forms make it difficult for MHB staff to analyze fully.
Thank you very much. And Elaine Palencia and Kyle Patterson are the reviewers for this one, so go forth.
Sure. This is a program that we've funded for a long time. I think it really gets at the core of what First Followers does, which is peer mentoring, people with lived experience, having influence on the programming. I would say it looks like we make up a little bit less than half of the budget. And I like that they are trying to start a urban gardening project. That's pretty cool. But yeah, that's what I have.
Yeah, I certainly wanted to know more about the urban gardening project. But there's zero sale of goods and services, and so I'm wondering, is all the produce given away? Does it go to the people who are already connected to the program, or just, what happens to the food? And on page 36 of the big total application, there was some mention of $64,700 going to the Topsoil Urban Gardening Project. So I didn't know if, for instance, people who worked in that were being paid like the people in the workforce development course, or whether that was for the person who, or if it was, you know, I'm sure they need to buy seeds and stuff, or just, or the person who is directing it, who's, or what. That was just an area I was interested in, the whole idea of the gardening, just didn't know more, you know, enough about it. And there were other places that the numbers, I was wondering about, there are, when you look at measures of utilization, there are 40 individuals in the treatment plan clients, and then the service contacts are 40 contacts with employers and landlords. I thought, does that mean there's only one contact per treatment plan client, or does it mean, I don't know what it means. It just seemed like that just seemed like a low number for service contacts, for sure. And then the staff pointed out that the total agency budget has a deficit of $89,800, and the total program, a surplus of $53,000, but the CCMHB part balances. So that's another place where I just didn't understand the math. I like, you know, the program. I like, because this is about giving people something to do that is going to inform how they live their lives, and that's a wonderful idea. So that's all I have.
Thank you very much. Are there any other comments or questions from board members? Elaine, was there anything you wanted to direct directly to the agency, or have staff answer potentially?
I guess we do have somebody here. Sure, you know, I was curious about the how the gardening program works financially with what we've been given. Yeah, that'd be good to know more about that.
If someone from the agency could come forward and answer the question, that would be great.
Thank you.
Can you turn the mic on?
Is that on? Yeah. So the gardening project, Topsoil, was really an idea that came about from one of the residents in the First Steps Community House. And so he had a little bit of exposure to horticulture during his time of incarceration. But when he got out into the community and just began to move around and look at what was going on, and looking at opportunities for himself and also for First Followers contributing more to the community, he took up the idea. He called it Topsoil. Mm-hmm. And he began, we began at a house that we had. So we built raised beds, about 7 raised beds in that house, and that was like about 3 years ago, I think. So it was really just kind of volunteer work at the outset, but now it's grown a lot. We have other houses. We've also made partnerships with Sola Gracia and other organizations that have to do with with gardening and so forth. And so so the money that's there, some of it goes to pay the person that runs it, but also it goes to pay for equipment and seeds and fertilizer, et cetera, for the project. I hope that.
Yeah, and
so the produce has been really given away to the community. And also, I mean, some people in First Followers have gotten some of that produce, but certainly not the largest part of it. And we're actually developing a much more sophisticated distribution network. We have a trailer now, and we're going to be going to different sites and giving produce away, particularly to senior citizens. Yeah.
That's good information. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other comments from board members? I guess in terms of reasons to fund, I think we've been talking consistently about the importance of peer support as an important model of serving many communities. I think the program services are well-defined and innovative. I like the outcome measures for this program a little bit more specific, I think, than the other program. It's a well-established and well-liked and collaborative agency, and lived experiences at the base of everything they do. Reasons to not fund would be similar to what I've said before around the audit piece, the specific financials in this budget proposal, the CLC plan being incomplete. I think I'm concerned about what happens to both programs when ARPA stops and if our funding were to stop. I think since we are not the full program, we do not comprise as much of the program budget for this one compared to the reentry house. So if I was going to pick one, I would fund the reentry house, but other board members are certainly able to disagree on that. But those are some thoughts on there. Any other comments from board members? All right, seeing none, we will move on. So we will unfortunately have to skip GCAP this evening due to still not having their financial review. So we will next move on to GROW.
GROW in Illinois Peer Support. This request for $179,805 is a 14% increase over the current level and would continue a program funded by the Mental Health Board in recent years. A unique 12-step peer support approach to mental health recovery with experienced members leading many groups in the community as well as the jail. Discrepancies in financial forms make it somewhat difficult to interpret. Not clear the full amount is needed, but MHB funding is 96% of the total program revenue. The local agency is part of a larger organization with a long history, once received state funding, and has continued to apply for state contracts.
All right, and Jen Straub and John Paul Joachim are the reviewers for this one, so please go forward.
So I guess like Leon said, we do fund 96% of it, so that does worry me, like with other programs. And then there are errors in the budget form that make it difficult to determine funding based on staff's evaluation. On the other end, they have three dedicated people with two that are in the jail every week. So we are targeting high-need individuals in the community. But like staff said, like Leon said, I don't know how much funding they truly need from us. And at some point, they do need to get other funding. We have talked about this to them in previous years, even when Jillian Rappaport was on our on our board. So I would like to see some demonstration that they have at least applied for other things, even if they did not get funding from other areas. I want to see in the form that we've tried to apply for. I wonder if that is something for future years and applications, like, you know, not just what funding you have, but what have you tried, and even if you failed, so then we can say, oh, okay, you're trying, you know, that there's just limited resources, which is often the case, but I want to I want to see demonstration that you've applied.
Do you have a comment, Lynn?
If you have a question for me, or I think the director is here, but we just learned this afternoon that they did apply for it and get some other funding. We are going to meet with them tomorrow to get a clearer understanding of what it is and if it's actually like this program or a separate program. But so your dream is coming true.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah. So, I know a lot of these agencies are applying, but it's nice for us to make an informed decision. That's all. But otherwise, I do like the program. Hopefully we can fund it, or at least most of it, this year.
Just to follow up on that, it's a great and well-established program. We certainly have a high need for recovery programs in our county. They have a really impressive number of TCP and NTCP, which I was kind of blown away by when I'm reading the application. I wasn't able to determine a really clear need for the increase that's requested. And so if we were to fund, I might suggest funding at last year's level.
Thank you both very much. Any other questions or comments from board members? I can go ahead and share my why should we fund. I think we've all talked about this is a great program. It really meets people who need support where they are with peers. I think peer support has been a big theme of this year. It is a well-loved program. It's a long-established program, and we've heard many good things about other partners really appreciating their work. I think potential reasons to not fund or not fund fully, I think in addition to the things that have been shared, I think there have been late audits in the past. I don't believe the audit was late this year, but please, yes, they were on time this year. I think there were some aspects of the financials that were challenging to understand. And again, not sure that the increase was fully justified, and also hope that they will expand funding, and are really heartened to hear about what was shared with us today. So there was something else I was going to say, and now I don't remember. So those are my thoughts on that one, and hopefully – oh, I was going to say one reason to fund is I believe, if I'm understanding right, and Lynn and Leon and Chandra, maybe you can tell me – they do have funds set aside for a bookkeeper from ours. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think they're one of the agencies, and First Fathers has just left, but both of those agencies, I think, do have a consulting bookkeeper, or they may have one on staff. You know, after we asked them to do that, they did it.
I'm always glad to hear that, and I'm sorry I missed that for First Followers, but that's very good information.
Brenda wants to say something.
Can I say something?
Unfortunately, we're not going to have time unless there's a specific comment from a board member or question. Sorry, a specific question from a board member. Sorry about that. Are there any other comments or questions from the board?
I'd love to hear from Brenda.
Okay. We do have a request from a board member for Brenda to share her comment.
Okay. I just wanted to give you an idea. I think I understand something's not matching in the budget. But what happened with us is we accepted the two-year grant last year, and immediately Feller and Kuster raised from what we were paying like $4,000 a year up to almost $13,000 a year for our financial review. We had to reduce salary. Besides trying to go ahead and deliver what we delivered, and we had to maneuver things around in order to be able to pay for those financial reviews. So we ended up in the hole with what we put in for that, I had the numbers in my head, but it ended up being quite a bit of money. The other thing that went on was the rent raised. Our rent's going to raise on the office that we do have. And then, you know, everything else is going up. And the rest of that was getting some staff some money because the minimum wage changed in the process of that two-year grant that I accepted. And I was not prepared for that because it just didn't cross my mind. So I just wanted to give you an idea of why. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other comments or questions from the board? All right. Seeing none, we will move on. I respectfully ask my fellow board members to please be very clear and precise about what questions you have and direct them to me out of fairness to all agencies, because we're starting to get in a slippery slope here. So if you have a question, please state it very clearly and direct it to me so that we can, instead of me guessing, so we can next move on to our next application.
Habitat for Humanity Home Buyer Program. This request for $229,560 would support a new program, though the agency was not previously funded by the Mental Health Board. The mental health board portion would be 12% of the total program revenue, supporting 81 people to participate in the home buyer program through the build process, or those who've purchased a home through Habitat, and supporting 128 others in the education program. While the program does not include direct behavioral health support, its eligibility criteria include consideration for people with medical or disability accessibility needs and engagement focuses on people with lower income and lower loan approval rates, often members of historically under-resourced groups.
Thank you very much. And the reviewers for this one are Elaine Palencia and Kyle Patterson. So please share your thoughts.
Well, though they are new to us, of course, Habitat for Humanity is has one of the biggest profiles for helping people in a community, and so I think the really only question I would have, and it's already been stated that they look at historically underserved communities to help them. 90% of the families in the homeownership program identify in that the BIPOC category. And as was just said, they look at people who have medical and disabilities needs, but it, as far as I can tell, they don't prioritize the part of the core group that we think about, which is mental health or substance use, people with those issues. And so I think, there's no question that it's a valuable program to the community. Our question would be about defining how widely do we define our own mission. You know, is it mission creep to say, well, yes, of course you're going to have mental health issues if you don't have a home and you need one, that we know that. But so that's the only issue that I have, really, is just that how specifically or how broadly we see our own responsibility in regard to this application. Kyle.
I think everybody's heard of this organization. It's a national organization. It's very well regarded. They do great work. I don't know if the work that they do is the Champaign County Mental Health Board's work. And, I mean, just a big factor to me, I saw the staff note that said the target population is clearly defined and it's providing affordable homeownership opportunities. though people with mental health or substance abuse use issues may not be prioritized. And I think by looking at the target population, a big aspect of that is stability. So while I think that it's an important program to have in the community, I don't think that's our mission. And also, I think we accounted for, is it 15% of their overall budget? So I don't think that, although it is a very large contribution, I don't think that it's going to have quite the impact on the, on their program that some other agencies might experience.
Thank you both very much. Any other comments or questions from board members? Right. I would say reasons to consider funding, you know, having stable housing impacts mental health. I also appreciated that, you know, many, like most of this, even though this is a new application, there's like rules were followed. In terms of why should we not fund, I agree with my colleagues who have, you know, in addition to it being a new program and us minding maybe having to limit new program funds this year, I think when it comes to applying for mental health board funding, clearly defining that these are that we're serving populations in need of mental health services, or having the services be very specific around mental health. Like we work with many other programs that are within housing-related services, but they all have like a peer support or behavioral health service component that I think this did not have as clearly. And this year, I know we have to be really, this is going to be harder and not everyone's going to get funded. So clearly defining your population is an important part of the application. Any other comments or questions from the board? All right, seeing none, we can next move on and we jump from the alphabet from the letter H to the letter P. So we are nearing the end sooner than we think.
Promise Healthcare Mobile Clinic. This request for $200,000 is a new program component which the agency would prefer to add to one of the programs currently funded by the Mental Health Board. This amount would be 76% of the total program revenue with other payers comprising the rest, Medicaid, Medicare, private insurance, and self-pay. The agency is currently piloting this mobile service to reach people where they are, schools, public housing, one day per week with a counselor and a case manager. MHB funds would expand the service to twice weekly, adding a virtual psychiatric nurse practitioner and enrollment specialist. Some of the financial form issues we staff noted to have to do with the currently funded programs. If this program is also funded, the agency will update all forms and has provided our staff with details.
Thank you very much. And Jen Straub and John Paul Joachim are the reviewers for this one. So go forth.
Okay. As somebody who works with folks who are sometimes hard to pin down to one place. The idea of making mental health mobile is very exciting to me. And I think that this is a really promising program. I think, Promise Healthcare has a long-standing tradition in our community. I noted that, the TCP is only $350, but NTCP is, $1,200, which is impressive. I think in this time where we are not Scrooge McDuck, reveling in our pools of money. unfortunately, we would love to. And I see that this program can exist without our funding. It is existing without our funding. I wonder if it's not the time to wait until next year to consider funding any new programs.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it says we are funding 76% of the total program revenue, but they will be starting this spring and providing once a week services without us, without our funding. With our funding, it'll be 2 days a week. It is going to be a slow process, this endeavor. Mm-hmm. No-show rates for new patients when I see them in the clinic is easily around 50%. And even if you call them the day before, even if you call them the day of, it doesn't matter. And for psychiatric patients with mental health needs, they oftentimes tend to have more transportation issues. Yes, coming there, going to different sites is going to be making it easier for them, but I don't know how consistent the service will be for each patient, and how consistently those families or patients will go to those places for their visit. Because even in our mobile clinics, no-show rates are on the higher end too for when we bring our specialists, like cardiology or pulmonology or any of the other ones that go on the mobile clinics. It is not easy to have consistency. Counseling, that is great. I think most of the TPC, the treatment plan clients, are going to be counseling. A lot of it will probably getting them case management to get them probably onto Medicaid if they're uninsured, so then they can get services more easily, get medical transportation for visits arranged for them to go to the brick-and-mortar locations. But again, this is going to be a slow process. It's a lot of money for something that is probably not going to hit as many treatment plan clients as they say in this application. If they do, I would be, you know, ecstatic. And then next year, I'd be like, yes, 100%, here we go, let's do this. But I think a lot, I would keep in mind that a lot of this is probably going to be counseling and case management. The virtual nurse practitioner psychiatric services says 25. I say probably that if they're going once a week, that means like one psychiatric medication management every other week they're getting a patient. So it's not really like people coming in with bipolar who want Abilify, or kids with really bad oppositional behaviors getting risperidone, like antipsychotics or mood stabilizers or medication management, because that is going to be very hard. Counseling would probably be a lot easier to do on the mobile clinic. Again, though, a lot of these people, I don't know, can they get them from other sources that will be covered, or is this already overlapping services? Kids getting it in school counseling, are they being referred? There's a lot of places in the area that take Medicaid if they have the medical card for counseling now more than they used to. Places like Envisage, places like Evergreen, Promise Healthcare obviously has a brick and mortar. There's Rosecrans, there's Hope Springs, ABC Counseling for kids at least. A lot of these places people may not want to go, but there are a lot more options than there used to be. It's really going to be the uninsured. And so really case management, getting them Medicaid is going to be the biggest step. So I don't know. I would like to see them demonstrate the success of the program and then come back next year and see, you know, is this worth funding? What services have they been providing? What was their success rate? What have they learned? What are they going to do different?
One thought I had along with what you're saying is there a greater stigma maybe getting mental health care on a mobile clinic? Or is that not because I guess it'd be different. Oh, I had to get my flu shot versus, well, I had to talk to someone about my behavior or my depression or my attitude or, you know.
I mean, I think it depends on what you're going in for, right? Like if you're going in for ADHD, people have no problem coming in for that because it's like an obvious thing that's just been like, okay, this is the last straw. We're not doing well in school. We need to do something right now. Anxiety, it's usually the parent dragging the kid in, the kid not wanting to do something. Depression, same kind of thing. It depends. I don't know how it is with adults. Usually oppositional behavior, it's usually the parents bringing the kid in. Like they are biting, yelling, screaming, hitting the teacher, not following directions. There's a lot of – and the treatment for oppositional behavior is counseling, is therapy prior to doing medication. Medication is the last tool in the toolbox. But I think the stigma is in certain communities, but – I feel like if people are going, they're at that point where they've gotten to that point where it doesn't matter to them, the stigma, they've overcome it. If they are going to that clinic, typically, the biggest issue is people having the time, having the planning skills to make sure they're consistent with these things, and that's very difficult.
I had a question for our staff, actually, based on something that I read in the program summary. I believe there was something mentioned about that they could potentially amend their current contracts related to this. Like, I guess what I'm wondering is if we did not fund this year, could they amend their current contracts so that the services we're providing that they're providing through our other contracts could be provided in this mobile clinic? And am I misunderstanding something that was in the program summary?
No, I don't think you're misunderstanding. What they had asked to do was, could they just add this to one of the existing contracts? So this would be, I think, to the mental health services contract. I mean, it would fit with either one. But because these services are included in the other two contracts. But that's not typical for a two-year contract, so I suggested just make the application. And it's also my advice which caused the appearance of mismatched financials that Chris Wilson noticed, because I said don't change the other programs unless the board approves this. Like, they'll have to change all their total agency charts if they get this extra money. I just didn't want them to do any of that until there was, a board decision on it. So that's why you get these comments about, like, the financials are a little mismatched. But I think what you're asking is, could they add the services for the same cost? Is that what you meant?
Yeah, essentially, like, if the services that they're currently providing through our contracts would be provided in this location, could they take some of their current, if through a contract amendment, take some of that current contract and apply it to this location, essentially? And it sounds like they could do that.
They could absolutely. We just can't raise the amount of a contract without, that can be done through a contract amendment process, but it's a full board consideration. So it'd be the same as this, except at a different time of the year. Yeah.
All right, thank you for clarifying that. I also just wanted to note that if I took my notes correctly, that some of these psychiatric services would be provided over telehealth through the mobile clinic. So I'm not going to lie, I don't know if I'd want to walk into a mobile clinic and then sit in front of a computer to talk to a psychiatrist. And I say that as a predominantly telehealth provider. I mean, my clients will see me from their parked cars, but, like, that's their comfortable location that they're choosing to see me from. So that was something that I also wanted to note. I can give my overall spiel, but I want to give other board members the chance to comment. All right, seeing none, I will go ahead and give my spiel. Why should we fund this? These are core mental health services, so be reaching the community in a unique way, meeting people where they're at hard-to-reach places. I think reasons to not fund is this, like John said, this is going to be a slow process, and they are already launching one day per week without our funding, and it might be beneficial to have that sort of pilot going on for longer and potentially either come back with a request next year, or to potentially amend current contracts so that some of our current funding, while it would not be increased, could be diverted to this particular location. It is also, like, a very large percentage of the total program budget, so I would like to see them get other funding for this too. Any other final comments from the board? All right, seeing none, we can move to the next one.
Rosecrans Behavioral Health Urgent Care, another new program request from an agency which has operated several MHB-funded programs and made many changes in the last few years, partly due to other funding opportunities and, in this case, to input through their community needs assessment process. This request is for $360,000, which would be 37% of the total program revenue. Other revenue is from Medicaid and the State of Illinois Division of Behavioral Health and Recovery. The proposal is to offer 1,100 people crisis intervention and clinical assessment, diverting them from emergency room care and stabilization plans with linkage to other services and supports.
Thank you very much. And Den Ahrens and Jane Sprandel are the reviewers. There, Den has shared some comments that I think between Jane and I will be able to share. So, Jane, go ahead.
I definitely love the idea of this program. I think it's something that we desperately need. I feel like our ERs and are inundated with mental health concerns right now, and it would be nice if those situations could be diverted elsewhere. A couple concerns I do have with this is, and we are only going to be like 37% of the funding of this, but $360,000 is a lot of only pennies. I don't want to say, oh, it's nothing, because it really is something big. A few concerns I had was they are going to be hiring 11 full-time positions to be hired. And I shared last week that phrase scares me in this community. Are you going to be able to find 11 trained people who will be able to stick with this work? Very hard and challenging work. Like I said, I love the fact that they will be working with first responders and stuff. I think Rosecrans has a proven track record of, you know, really being beneficial to a lot of people in this community. So that's not lost on me. One thing that kind of concerned me was urgent care is located on their Moreland Boulevard location. The facility will operate 12 hours daily, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 7 days a week, year-round. Without this funding, operating hours will be limited to standard business hours. And that was after I read above how this is targeted at the people who need it at their most vulnerable times, which are probably after 9 p.m., but I don't know that for a fact. So I guess as much as I love the idea of having 12 hours of immediate care, what about from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m.? Do we then just drop them off at the ER? I guess that would be a concern. I guess I'm not the one making this plan, so that's why they didn't do it 24 hours like I might have. Like I said, the biggest thing probably was the fact that they don't have the staff already on hired, so that's concerning. Again, you know, this has been a really hard year to look at applications that make a lot of sense, but do we really have the funding to meet their request? Not sure if this is something that we could assist on maybe a smaller scale, being that we are only 37% of their funding, but then at what point is it not worth them expanding this opportunity to the community?
Thank you very much. I wanted to share a couple of things that Den had shared. They were talking about the outcomes and targets, 60% to receive same-day clinical assessment and crisis intervention during the afternoon or PM hours, 70% presenting in crisis will be safely stabilized and diverted from emergency department referral or law enforcement involvement at service. 90% served will be discharged with documented stabilization planning and link to follow-up services, supports, or community-based care. Den had also shared, and they shared it in their notes, but they also shared with Lynn and Liana, myself, and gave consent to share this, that a program like this at Rosecrans was very helpful to them when they were in college in a crisis and was their intro to lifelong psychiatric care. I believe it was the Respite Center. But, you know, I know we've not always necessarily
we've heard a lot of negative things about Rosecrans, and I think it's important we share when these services are really beneficial. So I wanted to share Den's perspective before I share anything of my own, but I wanted to open it up to other board members first.
I almost wonder how much it would be just to fund if they could do like Saturday, Sunday for like 4 hours, you know, like in the afternoon or something. That would be a good, if it was a lot cheaper than, you know, it's going to be hard to hire people to work from that 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. during the weekdays, especially anyone who has a family. It's going to be also hard to hire people who have families to work on the weekends too. You know, unless everyone's picking up shifts, you know, and they're working different shifts. Like if you like work in the ER, that's how it is. And then also, are they paying them more if they're working those off hours? I don't know the answers to that, because then that would make it, you know, more like with our funding, can they determine how much they're paying people? Is there a guide on how much they can pay somebody? Is it by the position, or is there a leniency based on off hours? I'm not sure.
I know a little bit about the crisis intervention services that Rosecrans provides in other locations, because they are the ones who provide clinicians to respond to these situations at the hospital 24/7. So I guess my interpretation was that, you know, this would essentially be providing similar services in a different location, but potentially at different times. And the reason that I find this program so compelling, one, is it's part of the CC, the CCBHC, is that the right? Okay. Model that they had talked about back in the March study session, and the state was supposed to fund this and required this as a part of their being a CCBHC, and then said, oh, never mind, we're not going to fund this, but they still want to do it. I know as a clinician that the idea of going to the hospital to be triaged for possible hospitalization is terrifying. I have rarely had clients I've worked with in my own career who did not have a semi-traumatizing experience having to be at the hospital. And the idea, not to mention the situations where law enforcement are bringing people to the hospital, the idea that you could go somewhere that's not the hospital and get assessed for this in an environment that is way less overwhelming is huge. And I think I don't want to assume anything, but I would assume that the clinicians that would be providing these services would be fairly similar to ones that are at the hospital already providing the services. It would just be in a new location that has the potential to be more trauma-informed and less overwhelming to people.
Am I correct that they do not have a program like this right now, currently? Is that correct?
I do not believe so. I think they agreed to launch this program as part of the CCBHC, and then the state basically said that they would not fund that anymore.
And like I said, this was a very hard one for me because I recently spent some time in an ER, and there were 6 police officers with someone who definitely needed some mental health care, and I thought it was handled beautifully, but it was a bit traumatic for me, let alone that young lady who really didn't even know who she was at that point.
Other comments from, John, were you going to?
I was just thinking, because I'm a pediatrician, I was like, there's SAS, but I'm like, wait, is SAS only for kids? And yeah. Apparently SAS is only for kids. And it's basically anyone can call if you're having a child who is in mental health crisis. Instead of going to the emergency room, they will come to the house and do an assessment. And if they need placement for inpatient hospitalization, they will get them set up with that. It's state funded through the state of Illinois, but it goes up to 18 and they do up to 21 for some cases, it looks like.
Yeah, I think like the I have many friends throughout my career, especially early on as a social worker, who worked for either SAS or the Rosecrans, at the time Community Elements Crisis Intervention Team, and it was essentially that delineation. Once you got to a certain age, they didn't go to the home, that you had to present the hospital, and this would be like an alternative location. I know there's also other services that we defund, like the respite center, where people can go and have like overnight stabilization that's not the hospital, which I know is what Ben had been talking about. But yeah, I think that's, and certainly we can direct questions to the agency, but I think like the crisis intervention staff kind of already exists, but I think they would expand it to another location is sort of how I envisioned that. Other comments or questions? I think I've sort of made my rationale for why we should fund this clear, but I think it has, it's sort of similar to the promise one, where this is like delivering services that already exist in a new location that has the potential to be helpful, and that we're being asked to help fund part of it, but also that the service will exist without us. I am sort of curious, kind of in comparison of the two programs, how long each one would need to grow to be able to offer the services at the like the frequency that they are wanting. But I think being able to offer these like nighttime services for this particular program, I think would be particularly useful. I mean, essentially, it's like the equivalent of convenient care, but for mental health. In terms of why we should maybe consider not funding it, is that, you know, is this something that needs some more time to grow? Do some state and other entities need, funders need to step up and do the thing that they said they were going to do? Or could we fund it at a lower level and still have the program be able to exist? Any other comments or questions?
Quick question, sorry. Did I see that this could be reimbursed by like Medicaid or something? Was that in this? I've read so many proposals, I can't remember. Because I was just thinking, you know, we have a lot of individuals that are presenting in the ER, and those are being covered by Medicaid. So is Rosecrans able to, like, you know, bill Medicaid, or I'm sure private insurance and things like that? Okay, perfect. Thank you.
I think, you know, there's also lots of individuals who don't have insurance that would need funding too. And I think I don't know the source of the funding for the like existing crisis intervention program. I know it's not us, but I'm assuming there's funding from other places besides Medicaid. Any other comments? All right. Well, we are more than halfway done. I meant to say that before this one, but instead I forgot to reset my stopwatch. So it looks like we've been talking for 25 minutes about this app, but really is 25 minutes about the last two. So, Leon, please take us to the next one.
Rosecrans Benefits Case Management. This request for $181,000 would expand a program the Mental Health Board has funded for many years, which helps people secure public benefits. The large increase in the request is not explained in the budget narrative, but it is described in other application forms. The purpose is to add another full-time staff person to manage the increased demand. There is a note about improving access for rural residents. The person responsible for the program has been in the role for many years and has specialized credentials. The Mental Health Board portion would be 98% of total program revenue.
And this one was reviewed by Elaine Palenzi and Kyle Patterson, so please share your thoughts.
Okay, I'll start. So we've talked before about the, you know, growing industry of benefits case management that becomes so necessary with, as is mentioned here, you know, changes in requirements and all the things, the instability of federal funding and coverage instability that makes people, you know, destabilizes their search for benefits. So this is a proven program, and adding the second case manager is going to improve accessibility for rural residents. It was noted in the full application. People, you know, are going to be served in their homes. I had the question that when I looked at the list of people involved, there were so many staff openings. There were 12 staff openings at the time that this was printed. I don't know if that's changed, but just, yeah. So I didn't know, you know, I'm sure they're working on that, but. So,
do you want to ask the agency?
Well, we could, yeah.
Is there someone here from the Benefits Case Management Program who could answer that question? Elaine, could you restate that, your question?
Looking at the list of staff that are planned for this, there were a number of openings, and I just wondered about that. It seemed like.
Were they vacancies in the total agency?
It was in the large application.
Oh,
then.
Okay.
And
that's a good question.
I didn't. Yeah, Molly, are you looking for it? Aside from that, there's a 114% increase, but that I suppose is from one to two. Case managers, and I know it's the budget for our program is balanced, and they do coordinate with Champaign County Healthcare Consumers on these needs. So, you know, good program for sure and necessary.
Elaine, do you, I guess, do you still have a question about the vacancies that you want them to answer, or did we determine
you know,
it's
I
sort
just,
of?
I can just have pointed it out.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and scratch that question.
Yeah.
Kyle?
I don't think I have too much to add. I do like that they're increasing the amount of staff members. I know this can be very difficult work. And there is a very, very high need for this type of services. The system is not designed for your layman or really, I mean, especially in this situation, you come across people who have different mental health or different, you know, maybe low education, low literacy skills. It makes a lot of this very difficult.
Thank you both. Any other comments or questions from board members? Reasons to fund this. I think we've highlighted the importance of the service and that this, you know, working through these systems to get benefits is incredibly difficult. And it's a service that has a preventative nature to it, and it would make sense to expand the program given the capacity that, you know, the amount of people who need it. reasons to not fund or not fund fully, this might not be the time to expand any programs. The time to add a new staff member may not be at this time. It's both the reason to add and also to not add are basically the same because of the environment that we are in. I think there has been some question about kind of like, how easy is this program to access for clients that are not originally Rose Grants clients? And we do fund, almost all of this budget. So could there be other opportunities for funding or even the opportunity to develop a collaboration or referral agreement with Champaign County Healthcare Consumers instead of expanding staff, like make some referrals? So just some thoughts about how we might need to adjust this. Any final thoughts from board members?
I guess if we wanted to fund just the person they have on staff, we would want to know the number to fund that.
Would that essentially be what our current level is, or potentially a little bit higher?
A little bit more because of healthcare costs and inflation and all that.
I personally wouldn't really want to do the math, but I know for sure that our staff can do that because the agency does provide all that detail.
Yeah. Because how I interpreted it, it looked like majority of the request is for salaries. And I'm thinking, I can fill out those forms because I've been doing them. I'm applying.
No, it's those are clear lines. Staff costs are broken out very clearly, so we could figure that out.
Any other comments or questions? All right, we will move on to the next one.
Rosecrans Recovery Home. This request for $200,000 would continue a program the Mental Health Board currently funds. The 100% increase is not explained in the budget narrative, and because there is not a proposed increase in people served, it appears that this is because other funding for this program has been reduced. Mental Health Board funding would be 35% of the total program revenue, but in the last application for PY25, it was 19% with higher amounts of funding from the other sources. This is the only accredited recovery home in the county and is a step down from inpatient substance use treatment. Intensive case management, peer support, and 12-step approach are mentioned.
All right, and this application was reviewed by Alejandro Gomez and Tony Nichols, so here are your thoughts.
Yeah, I think Rosecrans Recovery Home, this is pretty much a strong program to consider funding because it addresses a very important gap between the inpatient treatment and then long-term recovery. It provides a structured recovery housing for adults with substance use disorders who often face like some additional barriers like homelessness, justice involvement, unemployment, limited support systems. The program is designed as a step-down level of care that combines the stable housing, peer support, case management, among other services. And I think, this kind of model can be very critical for helping people sustain recovery and avoid relapse. So, at the same time, I think there are some valid concerns that the board should weigh. The application is requesting a significant increase, double from last year. And then the review notes indicate that the reason for that increase was not clearly explained in the budget narrative. Also, there's concerns about the materials showing some utilization targets that were not being fully met in prior periods. And then there's a couple of financial and documentation items that, for me, I personally feel like they need to be resolved, before, contracting. So I do think this is a fundable program because of the population it serves and the value of the service model, but I would view it a little bit stronger if those concerns were addressed or answered. So I did have a couple of questions. Can you explain the reason for the significant increase in the funding requested this year, and then what specific programs, program changes or needs are driving that increase? That's one. Prior utilization results appear to have fallen short of their targets. So what do they think, contributed to that? And, what concrete changes are they going to make to improve, you know, access, the occupancy and engagement in the following year. And then also then the final question is that can they clarify the budget issues noted in the review, including the review form error? So.
Do you want to ask any of those to the agency right now, or do you want any of them to be kind of addressed more with staff?
If anyone would like to from the agency like to address those questions, I'm more than open to hearing that. Yeah.
All right. If there's anyone here from the recovery home program who could speak to that, that would be very helpful. You can unmute yourselves.
Hi, I'm Liz Miner with Rosecrans. I'll take a crack at the first question. So as far as the reason for the ask in the double, so our recovery home, the acuity of our clients, especially with comorbidity, is continuing to increase, right, as time goes on and we learn more about co-occurring disorders with substance use, which is really put some gaps and barriers in the way of some of our participants in being able to obtain long-term employment while in the program at a quicker rate than we are used to seeing. So that's part of what that ask is for, is mostly to help support our clients with their high acuity as they're going through early recovery and then trying to figure out the greater world beyond that.
And I would just add to that, with the struggles with finding employment, you know, there is a program fee that we charge that to help sustain the program. And that's hard to do when they're not employed and they just got out of 30 days of rehab. And so, you know, once they get the job, you know, we give them a grace period and we really work with them because we know it's not easy with their situation. Then once they're employed, you know, we have less, in a good way, we have less reimbursable opportunities because they're working and may not be available for some of the life skills things that we offer during the day. And so that's been a struggle, as especially in the last couple of years, to keep the program whole.
Any follow-up questions from anyone? All right, thank you very much. Any other comments or questions from the board? All right. Some reasons to consider funding this. This is an important core stabilization service for this community. It's the only certified recovery home in this community. And, you know, at least maintaining funding at current levels seems important. I think, you know, there have been some services kind of related to this area that have been lost recently, and continuing to fund what we do still have is important. Reasons to not fund or not fund fully. I appreciate the response that was given. I think more of a justification in the application itself would have been important. It is quite a large increase. So I think, you know, that is a consideration that we may not be able to make full increases this year. Any other comments or questions from the board? All right, seeing none, we can move on. We have four left.
Uniting Pride Children, Youth, and Family Program. This request for $225,056 would support an expansion of a program funded by the Mental Health Board for several years, an 18% increase over the current amount. The plan adds a part-time outreach coordinator to increase the number of people served and the number of service contacts by 67% to meet increased demand. The program includes support groups, specific assistance, educational programs, food pantry, gender-affirming clothing, and virtual services. People with relevant lived experience shape the program. The estimated cost of the annual financial review is higher than expected.
Thank you very much. So Alejandro Gomez and Tony Nichols reviewed this one, so please share your thoughts.
There we go. All right, that's me again. Yeah, I know. I think this program is a very strong program to consider for funding because it provides that affirming community-based support for LGBTQ plus youth and families at a time when many are facing heightened stigma, instability, and barriers to care. The program appears to offer a flexible range of services, including support groups, outreach, educational programming, basic needs assistance, the affirming resources, and then both in-person and virtual connections. What stands out is that it is intentionally designed for youth and families who may be especially underserved, including those who are BIPOC, disabled, rural, or otherwise marginalized. And the materials also suggest a strong community demand and effective outreach. At the same time, there were some valid concerns in terms of the increase in funding. I don't know if, you know, those have been addressed since then or since last time I had reviewed them, but the review identified a few financial and administrative issues that still needed to be resolved, including discrepancies in personnel forms and the need to allow a higher amount for independent CPA services. And then the materials also noted a prior funding suspension tied to late reporting because of some outcome data is collected like voluntarily, I believe, for privacy and safety reasons. Impact may be harder to measure consistently. But overall, like I said before, I think it is a fundable program because it fills an important gap and appears highly responsive to community needs. But again, if it would be strongest funded, you know, for funding if those budget and administrative issues are addressed. So a couple questions were, you know, explain the request increase in funding and maybe explain some of the staffing and just budget changes that support the increase. Let's see, the review notes prior reporting issues and past funding suspension related to late reporting. So what changes have been made to ensure timely compliance and stronger administrative accountability moving forward? And then because some outcome data is collected voluntarily for privacy and safety reasons, how do you plan to demonstrate impact consistently and credibly in the following year?
Thank you very much. Are there any of those you would like to direct to the agency now?
If they wish to.
We can let Lynn answer one, and then we can have the agency come up.
The answer to the easiest one is about the cost of a financial review, and we actually just heard that from Grow in Illinois, that a financial review costs $14,000, which that is the price locally. Our guidelines say $13,000, so the board would just enter into this contract knowing that you're agreeing to a higher cost. I mean, it's totally there's even language in the contract that you can do that. So it's just you need to know it, and they made it clear. The other questions I can't.
All right. Could an agency representative please come forward?
Hello, everyone. Is there a specific question you'd like to start with?
So in terms of, like, what changes have been made to ensure, like, the time of compliance moving forward, and just the administrative accountability?
Yeah, absolutely. The suspension related to late reporting earlier in this fiscal year was just a complete oversight in the craziness of Pride Fest. We are much more prepared going forward to make sure that we have those deadlines locked in and that we're doing our reporting, several days, several weeks in advance, to get everything locked down, especially as we get to Pride Fest. So definitely just making sure that we're on top of that. We've already made plans, marked the calendars down as best we can. As it relates to the financial review, as you know, our reviewer got fired in the midst of our review, which delayed the financial review being turned in. We worked as quickly as possible. Madison and the Abrio team got that in as quickly as we could. So definitely just making sure, and we've already very much stressed to Abrio that cannot happen again. And, you know, we need to have clear communication from them. So they know going forward that, you know, that's not going to happen. So those are things that we've addressed for the reporting side of it. As it relates to the personnel question that came up, so one of our positions, the finance and community programs manager position, is 50% administrative, 50% programmatic. And the way we had put it into the personnel form, and maybe I misinterpreted how we put it in, was done through a previous suggestion that Chris had given Nicole of how to list the positions in the personnel form, so that it shows, even though one person is working one position, that it's listed as 50 and 50. So that could have been an error of us inputting it, or maybe I kind of misinterpreted what the communication was there, but we can correct that and make sure that that going forward does not happen. As it relates to demographic data and reporting, our community right now is terrified for their lives. And that means giving us information is something that even our own community members aren't willing to do, because who knows what's going to happen 2 months from now, 6 months from now, where they want us to turn over data to the federal government that could put people's lives at risk. So I definitely understand you all need to see data and you all need to see outcomes, and the outputs that we are bringing back into the community. Through that, through this outreach coordinator position, and through kind of how we're reworking our programmatic approach, is to be able to share clearer outcomes with, like, motivational interviewing, doing more surveying throughout the year. Currently, we only survey twice a year, doing that more regularly, so quarterly, and really trying to get some more of this, not just the, like, quantitative piece, but the qualitative piece that you can see of, like, people having a profound impact from accessing our services. But I do think, like, it's always going to be there for our agency that many community members, especially trans community members, are unwilling to give us that data because it could mean their lives someday. Yeah. So I think, were there other questions that you may have or other members?
I was still on. Sorry. No, you hit them all. Thank you very much, Rick. Really appreciate that.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any other comments from board members? Reasons why we should consider funding this. This is a core service that we funded for a long time for a group that has been, as we've demonstrated through our own study session, is strongly at risk right now, in need of support in a variety of different ways. It's a service that is wide-reaching and holistic, meeting families in many different levels, and it seems like they're actively working on areas that need growth. Reasons to not fund or to fund at a lower level. I will acknowledge that the audit was not in at the time that the application was turned in, although it was turned in very, very soon after that. But it is something to note. I know they're making changes in that area. I think that there was an increase asked for, and there may be, we may have to make decisions to not give all the increases that people are asking for this year. But those are some thoughts on that. Is there anyone else who would like to share on the board about this application? All right, seeing none, we can move on to the next one.
We never walk alone. Train first responder peer support. This request for $20,330 would fund a new program from an organization the MHB has not previously worked with. The program offers peer support to a wide variety of first responders, including dispatchers and retired first responders, along with family members. Uses virtual and in-person options, training and certification, and access to a confidential support platform. The request would be 100% of the total program revenue. Because the financial forms appear to have discrepancies and to be missing key details, it is difficult to analyze, especially to justify the need for the request. The organization is a for-profit agency, so that So that to meet MHB requirements, they would form a local advisory council. In our experience, this can take some time. An agency-wide CLC plan was not submitted, making the application incomplete. Because they have not done an audit before, the agency shared 2025 financial information.
Thank you very much. And this next one was reviewed by Den Ares and Jane Sprandel. So we have some comments from Den, but Jane, go ahead.
I'm going to try to be hopefully brief about this one. I love the concept, but I don't understand it. I would assume that all of our local police, fire, MetCAD are already offering support services and things like that to their staff. So I'm not really understanding why we have a for-profit coming in wanting to offer the service. In the who will benefit, it only listed the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, Champaign Police and Fire, Urbana Police and Fire, Rantoul Police and Fire, and MetCAD. What about Homer? What about St. Joe? What about Thomasboro? We're here to also serve the entire county, so I'm sure that was just an oversight. Or was it? Within one day of referral, 100% of those referred will be assessed. I've been in management. I hope that if our fire chief knows that there's been a tragedy, he's stepping up saying, what can I do to help you? So that is a basic thing. They are looking for 38 peer supporters, which would be trained at a 3-day training event at the cost of $535. Again, I think our first responders and individuals like that need the most mental health care and support we can give them, but I'm not sure that the county mental health board should be the one to fund that. Sorry if I was kind of negative, but a couple comments from Den were, I'm confused. I don't really see anything about how this helps anyone who chooses to who wants to participate already participates in mental health and things like that. So I don't know. It's great in theory. I'm not really sure that we should be the one to fund it.
Thank you very much. Other comments or questions from board members? I guess it seems the program is essentially like the main focus is to do a 3-day in-person peer support training for these like 38 first responders, and then they can be peer supporters to other first responders who need assistance, which I think, I guess, going into why we should consider funding, like supporting first responders is important and I think is not necessarily targeted by a lot of services. And I don't know that these organizations are actually providing that support to their employees currently at the level that is needed. And we know that peer support is a like evidence-based approach to helping people with a lot of issues. Why should we not fund? I think the application was not clear. I think, you know, as has been mentioned, there's been some financial stuff that is unclear. There's mismatches between the two applications from this organization, and ultimately being a for-profit without a local advisory board and very few collaborative agreements here, I don't think they're really eligible for our funding at this time. So I think, you know, potentially if they grow this, if they further develop things and actually get more rooted in this community, maybe they could come back for funding later. I'm also concerned about the fact that there's no paid staff. I understand that, you know, grassroots cannot always have that, but I do want people to be compensated for their labor. So those are some of my thoughts. Any other comments or questions from the board? All right, seeing none, we can move on to the next one.
We Never Walk Alone, Vetted Mental Health Professional Network. This request for $19,656 is another new request from this organization. Staff concerns raised in the first program summary apply to this one as well. Addresses the priority category of strengthening the behavioral health workforce by creating access to licensed mental health professionals who understand the particular stresses and needs of first responders, including those who retired and their families. Private and group options with virtual access. The category of first responders include law enforcement, fire, dispatch, EMS, and correction staff, all of whom have higher mental health risk related to their work.
All right, and this one was reviewed by Elaine Palencia and Kyle Patterson, so please share your thoughts.
This is the same entity as the last one. I think it might be the lowest amount asked. It's just under $20,000. I found this request confusing. I'm not sure, maybe somebody can explain it, but I'm not sure exactly what they're asking for. The goal is to create access to mental health providers for first responders, but I don't quite understand, because it's only the, you know, a little under $20,000. I don't understand exactly how that creates that connection. I mean, first responders aren't paid the best, but, like, I think they have decent health insurance for the most part. You know, I, like, don't understand why there would be a lack of access or how this funding could create licensed help that is experienced in this field.
What you do is you Google it and you come up with the lists that they are wanting us to pay over $19,000 to create. So I don't understand what this is for. It would insert people between the person who needs care and the people who can give care and hand them off to those people. They don't diagnose this group, so they're basically creating a database, maybe. But if you, and I tried it, if you put in, you know, therapists who specialize in treatment for first responders, and you put in Champaign County, you come up with a list of them. So what is this for? I don't know. And then, as Molly said, Psychology Today has, right?
Yeah, you can search on Psychology Today for therapists in any different areas. And I know of specific practices locally that specialize in working with first responders.
They're not hard to find. They're there, you know.
And I would assume, like, these professions are highly, you know, they're unionized with strong collective bargaining agreement processes that would ensure that they are, you know, have mental health coverage or medical coverage that would cover mental health or an EAP service or something like that. So
that's what I was also kind of comparing it to, like, the type of employee assistance program or EAP where you call and they, like, help you find a therapist, basically. Like, lots of different employers have this, and that's essentially kind of what this seems to be, is like they're trying to make a database and then maybe, like, a way to reach out to them and they help you find someone, which I think can be helpful if you're overwhelmed and you're needing support to, like, just talk to someone and they'll find you the person versus doing it oneself. But I mean, this information is easy to acquire. I mean, there are probably campus partners who would be willing to maintain this list for our community. And I think, again, like, I'm not clear on how rooted in this community this organization is, if they don't really have working agreements in our community. And again, they're not an eligible organization, so they don't have a local advisory board. So again, kind of like
also not eligible. I think if I was going to pick one of the two apps, I would probably pick the first one because it does training. But yeah, those are some of my concerns about it. Does anyone else have thoughts? I guess I kind of said my why should we fund, why should we not already. I didn't quite phrase it as that, but that's how it came out. So if everyone else is ready to move on, I am happy to do so as well to our last application.
All right. Wynn Recovery, Wynn Resilience Resource Center. This request for $270,000 would be a new contract for the MHB to help support a program already operating through an agency which the MHB currently funds. The agency director has recently indicated that due to changes in other revenue amounts, the request should be adjusted to $210,000. While the application showed MHB funding at 40% of the total revenue, it would be lower. The center offers a safe space for members of the target population who are not using the agency's reentry housing. Supports include housing navigation, case management, substance use recovery groups, family therapy, and more. Some virtual services options. Peer-led services and people with lived experience shape the program. The consumer outcomes are benchmarks identified in the model and the same outcomes used in a current MHB-funded program, but specific targets should be added.
All right, thank you very much. And this one was reviewed by Alejandro Gomez and Tony Nichols.
This is a great peer-led support system. This program helps to support successful reentry from incarceration. Outcomes are great and tracked qualitative and quantitatively for each client. Let's see, eligibility criteria comes from the criminal justice system. Part of the discrepancy with the request of $270,000 is that we need clarification on the ICJIAR3 funding. And how much will that be included in this program?
All right, thank you very much. Other comments or questions from board members? Tony, do you want clarification from the agency now on that piece?
Sure, yeah. If there's someone available, yes.
Okay. So I believe there's a representative available. So Tony, if you could restate your question and then agency representative, then you could unmute and answer.
Sure. Could we get clarification on the ICJIAR3 funding and how much of that will be included in this program?
Yes. So what we did was we asked R3 for $289,689, and it was a typo in regards to the $37,000. So it increased to $235,689, but it's going to throw all my numbers off because I had a lot of funding changes. And so I do want to tell you that increased. But there were like the VOCA that actually decreased, but our pretrial increased. And so, but after we did the numbers, we were able to, with some increase of funding, we were able to allocate a salary that was on mental health and put it actually in that funding. And so that decreased that along with it. It increased about the revenue about 23,000 and some change. I don't know right off the head. My head, maybe it was 24. But anyway, our benefits and our taxes weren't calculated correctly. So we were hoping to use that particular amount of money that wasn't allocated to correct our budget in that category. So I do apologize. That was a lot.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
All right. Any other comments or questions from board members? This was an application that we saw last year and did not fund. Is there any board member who would like to speak about that at all?
I mean, I would just like to say I feel like they are doing a lot of good things, and they have sought out a lot of other revenue sources, so I do applaud them for that. I would like us to see us fund this program this year, but obviously this is going to be a tough discussion at the next meeting.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions from the board? I think reasons to consider funding this is, one, I think it was very difficult for us to not fund it last year. I think there was a lot of overlap in content between their two applications, and I think this year they came back, they took our feedback, they improved the application. I know that they're also have been working really hard on the sort of the audit process. It was late, but it was much earlier than it has been in prior years, and I think that the services are really, really important. I know the services are currently existing, but it's important to provide those services to individuals who are not within the home, living in the home, which we also, I believe, fund. I think reasons to consider not funding or not funding in full, I think the financial pieces in the application are still, I think, up in the air, and I would have liked to see some of that like nailed down and correct before submission. I know some elements might not be able to be, might not be known, especially with grants coming in. So I think, you know, there may be an opportunity for us to fund at a lower amount, but still fund. But I do appreciate kind of as a reason to fund is that they do get other grants. You know, do we need to be relied on for, it seems like now more like 30% of the budget. Any other comments or questions from board members? All right, seeing none, that concludes our review of applications for now. There are two that are outstanding, and if and when their audits come in, we can review them at that time. We do not know if we'll have funding left at that time, so hopefully these can come in as soon as possible. But I just want to give us a round of applause because we went through 26 applications in the last two study sessions/meetings, and everybody, staff, board members, and agencies did a phenomenal job. So I'm going to clap. I know the energy in the room is low, but I'm going to try to keep it up for the next few items. So we do have an opportunity for more public participation and agency input. I know everyone is tired, but it is possible that people will want to speak. So I do hope for our presence. As always, members of the community are welcome to speak with the mental health board and share their thoughts. We cannot respond directly to public comment, but we may use it to inform future decisions. If you would like to make public comment, you can approach the podium. You can fill out a comment card and give it to me. Or if you're online, you can raise your hand or put something into the chat. I may limit individual time, especially right now, to 5 minutes and total time to 20 minutes. Is there anybody who would like to make public comments in person or online? No one is moving forward in person to make comment, and no one has put anything onto Zoom. All right.
Well, seeing none, we can next move on to board announcements and input. Does anyone have any board announcements or input? All right, seeing none, the next item is to adjourn. Our next meet study session will be Wednesday, May 20th at 5:45 p.m. in the Shields Carter Room of the Bennett Administrative Center, where we will be discussing potential funding scenarios. Have a good night, everyone. We are hereby adjourned. Only a few minutes longer than last week. Record.